Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. I hope you're all having a good Friday evening. And, of course, depending on where in the United States you are, it will determine probably how your evening is going. Here in the Northeast, of course, we are getting hammered once again. I think somebody failed to pay the weather bill. We're expecting record levels of snow up in Boston, and New York won't be far behind. As they say, give me a break, but then again, it is winter. But wherever you are, I hope it's been a good week for you, for your families. And I'm thankful that you're here joining me because my goal, my mission, ever since 9/11, as you know, has been to provide the information that the mainstream media, for whatever reason, and there's lots of them, lots of motivation, have refused to really delve into the way that they need to. It's incredible how when there's a story with some prurient interest or some utterly wacky example of humanity at its worst, the news media gather all over it and jump all over it. It's kind of like ants at the picnic, you know, they can't get enough of it. But when we look at the issue of national security, when we look at the issue of the economy and the other impact that virtually uncontrolled immigration is having on America, suddenly there are precious few journalists, so-called, who are willing to talk about the story. You know, for those of you who are familiar with me, you know that I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Spent 30 years with that agency. Its mission, allegedly, has been picked up by the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, an agency that, because of its ineptitude, corruption, and incompetence, I have come to call the Department of Homeland Surrender. But in any event, I worked for that agency for 30 years. It provided me with, I think, a unique perspective, a unique insight that I am happy to share with our fellow Americans so that you understand what's going on and whether or not you're getting your money's worth. Most assuredly, we are not. And rather than delve into the gory details about my 30-year career with the INS, suffice it to say that I've testified before numerous congressional hearings. I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. I've worked with states like Arizona when they were incredibly sued by the federal government for daring to enact immigration laws that largely parallel the federal laws that, of course, the federal government does not want to enforce. I assisted that law firm. I assisted Congressman Lou Barletta when he was Mayor Lou Barletta and was the mayor of a bucolic town in the mountains of Pennsylvania, Hazleton, when he got sued by the ACLU for daring to show the chutzpah, common sense, and leadership to enact ordinances that would penalize people who intentionally hired illegal aliens or provided housing to them. Not because Lou is a xenophobe. I've come to know him quite well. Quite the contrary, he was upset. He was devastated that this town that had been his town since birth suddenly was being invaded by violent gangs from Latin America, MS-13 in particular. There were murders. There were shootings. There was the sale of narcotics to kids. And he understood that the immigration laws could be an effective tool, an effective weapon to combat the violence and the lawlessness that suddenly reared its ugly head in that beautiful town of his. So I was thrilled, I was honored to be the final witness at his trial. But if you want to read more about my background rather than waste precious airtime, please go to three websites. First of all, I have my own personal website. That website is michaelcutler.net. Not .com. It's another Michael Cutler, great name. I'm sure he's a great guy, but my website is michaelcutler.net. I also have another website, talkborder.com, one word, T-A-L-K-B-O-R-D-E-R, talkborder.com. And finally, I'm a senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They will undoubtedly tell you, and on an evening like this, boy, it makes me all the more envious, but they are situated in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, right off the Pacific coast, a beautiful part of the country, made some great friends out there, wonderful place to visit. And that, of course, is Santa Barbara, and CAPS is headquartered there, Californians for Population Stabilization. And they were developed, brought into existence, if you will, when they began to see up close and in person what was happening to their state of California when the federal government refused not only to secure the borders, but to enforce the immigration laws, because after all, those immigration laws exist for only two purposes: to protect innocent lives and to protect the jobs of American workers. That's why we have immigration laws. So again, I write for them, and their terrific website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. So there's three websites: michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com, and last, certainly not least, capsweb.org. I want to begin my conversation today by telling you, first of all, that if you would like to call in and join a conversation with me, you're more than welcome. The phone number here is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. I want to start out today, and I'm doing a solo because I very often have guests on, and I love having guests on, but every once in a while, I get so overwhelmed by the massive stupidity coming out of Washington, and boy, you almost want to ask the question that Jews ask on Passover: why is this evening different from any other evening? And it's because this unabated push for a massive amnesty program for unknown millions of illegal aliens continues to go forward. Incredibly, you might think, but I don't, aided and abetted by members of the Republican Party. And, you know, when I do speaking engagements, and yesterday I was at the Queens Village Republican Club, and in fact, the gentleman who's running for mayor, Thomas Alon, spoke, and I spoke, and I met with a bunch of the folks who are part of this Republican Party chapter, which is, as I understand it, the oldest in the United States. You know, people have to understand that it was Ronald Reagan, the conservative Republican, who gave us the first amnesty. Both political parties have come to see tremendous gain in America's open borders and, quite frankly, in the exploitation of foreign workers, and not just at the bottom rung of the economic ladder, not just the aliens who do the scut work, the manual labor jobs. Pardon me, I've got a frog in my throat that doesn't want to leave. But it's also about importing high-tech workers, about bringing in foreign students. Across the board, we are importing unfair competition for American kids, American students, American workers, and this makes no sense. Ours, as Abraham Lincoln so aptly put it, and his birthday is coming up shortly, so let's think about those words, about a government by the people, of the people, and for the people. I'm probably getting it out of order, so don't send me any emails. I know I probably screwed that up, but the words are as important as the concept, and the concept is as important as the words. The idea is that our government is supposed to be comprised of our fellow Americans and look out for the well-being of our fellow Americans. Not so much anymore, folks. You know, if I could just pipe the hot air coming out of our Congress and the White House, put it in a big tube and pipe it up north, we could melt all that snow before it even had a chance to hit the ground tonight. Now we see where Senator Rubio from Florida has joined the bandwagon. They've got this gang of eight, the so-called bipartisan group in Washington, that's supposed to arrive at a decision as to how we're going to implement comprehensive immigration reform, as though this is what's needed. The system is broken, so the solution is give citizenship to anybody that walks, crawls, or flies. All they have to do is say a couple of magic words. You know, they will probably have to claim that they got here by a certain date and claim that they're good people and make some other ridiculous claims. And I say ridiculous because we do not have the ability, the resources, the will, the desire, or the spine to conduct investigations to determine the truthfulness of any of these applications. Right now, the administration embarked on a program of enforcing a non-existing law. For all the laws that they don't enforce, they are now administering a law that does not exist. The law that I'm speaking about is the DREAM Act. Congress wisely voted down the DREAM Act and voted down comprehensive immigration reform. I testified before a number of congressional hearings in both the House and the Senate about comprehensive reform. I came to call it the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act because it would require our government to give unknown millions of illegal aliens official identity documents, even though there's no way of determining whether or not the names that these people claim are their names are really their names. There'd be no way of verifying that they are even citizens of the countries that they claim that they're citizens of. And if that sounds a bit far-fetched, I want you to understand the magnitude of the problem that we're facing. Right now, there is a growing number of Iranian shock troops, QUDs, depending on how you want to translate it. It's Q-U-D-Z, Q-O-D-Z, pronunciation, QUDs. They are the Iranian shock troops. They are good at sabotage and assassination. And there are flights directly from Tehran, Iran, that arrive weekly, as I understand it, in Caracas, Venezuela. Venezuela, of course, headed up by that tremendous friend of America, Hugo Chavez, who just loves America, loves us to death. So this is what we are experiencing and witnessing. We have Iranian troops coming into the Western Hemisphere. We have terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil. Among the terrorists that are being trained in that tri-border region, members of Hezbollah, Hamas, and Al-Qaeda. So how hard would it be for somebody from the Middle East, Mohammed, if you will, to go to South America, live there for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it takes, you know, and then claim to be Miguel, acquire language proficiency, acquire familiarity with the culture and the terrain, be able to speak authoritatively about the cities and the restaurants and all the things that people usually talk about when they're native to a particular town or city, do so convincingly, come to the United States and claim to be from Latin America, when in point of fact they could well be terrorists or members of the QUDs. Now, before you think, oh boy, Mike Cutler has gone off the deep end, we're going to join the Flat Earth Society because Mike just drove off the edge, Mike McCall had a report done called The Line in the Sand that went into this whole issue about what is happening just south of that border. Mike McCall, you should know, at the time was chairman of a subcommittee of the Homeland Security Committee in the House of Representatives. I am elated to tell you he now chairs the House of Representatives Homeland Security Committee. It was his report that detailed many of those same facts that I have been jumping up and down about, and many others of us who have familiarity with the issues have been jumping up and down about and trying to be the canary in the mine and warn people and say, look, when 9/11 happened, think of that parade of politicians who went before the cameras, went before those microphones, thumped the podium, thumped their chests, beat their brows, and demanded to know why nobody, but nobody, connected the damn dots. We're connecting the dots, folks. Send your congressman or congresswoman a coloring book and crayons, because these are the dots. Okay? We have foreign troops whose specialty is sabotage coming in growing numbers to Latin America. I assure you they're not there for R&R, you know, rest and relaxation. They are there on a mission. I'm fearful that we are the mission. Iran continues on with its nuclear program. The Ayatollah, who runs the religious side of the government, which is to say the guy that really has the biggest stick, doesn't even want to have direct talks with the United States. And naively, stupidly, or worse, our government keeps saying, well, you know, we can't really act. We're going to try to exhaust all the diplomatic channels. Well, look, I don't want to see us go to war. I don't want to see bloodshed. And I especially don't want to see bloodshed within our own borders. So Iran is going full tilt to acquire nuclear weapons. I've read really worrying reports that they've acquired new centrifuges, which will make it far easier for them to purify uranium and make it of the quality where it could be used as nuclear fuel, which would then, of course, not be that difficult to go from that to weapon-grade uranium. So we know that they're pushing on. And what are we doing besides sitting on our hands? And I assure you that if eventually we have to attack or the Israelis attack, and Ahmadinejad was very clear about it, and I take him at his word, crazy as a bedbug as he may appear to be, I think he was literally and figuratively deadly serious when he said that if the United States, its allies, or Israel attacked Iran, they would attack us. I don't think anybody with a half a brain really considers that an empty threat. And how would the attack come? Very possibly by sleeper agents, Congressman Steve King, who up until the current Congress was convened, had headed up Homeland Security, also talked about how many sleeper agent CUDs or terrorists from Iran are already pre-positioned in the United States. During some of my congressional hearings, I've cited what Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI, talked about when he testified. What did Robert Mueller, director of the FBI, talk about? The presence of sleeper agents in the United States. Now, I want you to understand what a sleeper agent is for those of you not up on this lexicon of intelligence language, intelligence speak. A sleeper agent is a foreign national, someone from another country, someone that I call an alien, and the open borders crowd, the immigration anarchists, go bananas when I use the term alien or when anybody does. So let's be very clear about what the word alien means. Any person, not a citizen or national of the United States, is an alien. That's not Mike Cutler's definition. That is the definition contained within the Immigration and Nationality Act. There is no insult in that definition. There is no insult in the term alien. The reason that the open borders crowd, the immigration anarchists, have a problem with the word alien is that it provides clarity, crystal clarity. And if you want to know what it feels like to be an alien, you don't need a flying saucer, folks. Just go to Canada. Go to Mexico, England, France, Germany, Spain. Pick some country and go there. And as soon as you get off the airplane, as soon as you walk across the bridge, as soon as you get out of your car, when you're on their soil, unless you're a dual national, if you're an American citizen, you have become an alien by virtue of standing on the soil of another country. That is an internationally accepted way of viewing the universe, except in wacky America. Because here we have suspended all common sense, all reason. It's all about propaganda. When I was a kid, I'm sure many of you also read George Orwell's 1984 and Newspeak, and the idea that if you could eliminate words, you could eliminate concepts. Well, that's what we're witnessing today, especially in the wacky world of immigration. So please understand what it is that we're up against. We are up against the potential that sleeper agents have already entered the United States, with more coming and more available to come should the need arise for them. In their view, not our view. And they would probably come across the Mexican border. But that's not the only way of getting here. So we now have Obama convening this Gang of Eight, and they said, well, when Janet Napolitano declares that the border is secure, we can then proceed with comprehensive immigration reform. I was on Neil Cavuto's program with Eric Bowler, and you know, it was a remarkable experience. Eric does a good job. I've been on with him on Fox and Friends, and I've been on Neil Cavuto's program many times, and we talked about this idea that the Gang of Eight, these four Democrat, four Republican senators sitting in a closed room, what else, hammered out this brilliant idea that Napolitano, the woman who continues to tell us every opportunity how great and how secure the borders are, never mind that probably at another news conference or maybe later in the same news conference, she will admit that hundreds of American cities have become infested by members of the Mexican cartels who crossed that supposedly secure border. Their drugs have crossed that supposedly secure border. We have millions of illegal aliens in the country who have crossed our borders, but they will tell you, oh, the border is secure. Right, and a sieve holds water, doesn't it? It's insanity. But what you need to realize is that America does not simply have four border states. We hear it all the time. Oh, yes, America's four border states, California, New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas. folks, if you buy that foolishness, I have a fence to sell you. America does not just have four border states, it has 50 border states. And I know I've probably said this to you before, but I will continue repeating this until it sinks in, until the politicians in Washington get it, until we, the people, get a hold of those politicians and make sure they get it. Any state that has a seaport or an international airport is as much a border state as are those states that lie along our northern as well as our southern borders. The Canadian border is nearly twice as long as the Mexican border. And yes, Canada is a very different country from Mexico. Canada is not a third world country. I had the distinct privilege when I was assigned to DEA intelligence and when I was part of the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force, I had the distinct privilege of working with Canadian law enforcement officials, including the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and they were terrific. They were every bit as professional and trustworthy and dedicated as the best that we have here in the United States. But nevertheless, people are people are people. And we know that there are dozens of terrorist training or terrorist groups, rather, operating in Canada. And we know, if history's taught us anything, that in preparation for attacks, terrorists need to travel and very often travel internationally. Well, if you have this 4,000 mile border that supposedly separates the United States from Canada, doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that it's easy to get from Canada to the United States without detection. This isn't a slight against Canada or Canadians or anybody. But, you know, homeowners tend to look through their peephole before they open their door to a stranger. Nobody in their right mind leaves the front and back doors open, the windows open, and then goes to sleep at night, especially if you know that there is a threat that bad people want to come into your house and do harm to you. In 1993, there were two terrorist attacks committed in the United States by men from the Middle East. All of them had committed visa fraud. All of them were violating immigration laws by their actions in our country. And we were unable to find them. We had no idea what they were doing. The bomb went off in the basement of the Trade Center, in the garage of the World Trade Center, killing six people, injuring a number of at least 1,000 from everything I've read, inflicting $500 million of what had been an iconic centerpiece of the lower Manhattan skyline. And you should know that if the tower had come down sideways, which it almost did, rather than just shudder, you probably would have had hundreds of thousands of dead bodies. Lower Manhattan might still be uninhabitable. So understand, we have seen how committed these people are to our destruction. They're so committed, they're willing to kill themselves. In 2002, in fact, I was called upon by Congress, by Sheila Jackson Lee, liberal Democrat, to testify about how Muhammad Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, two of the dead terrorists, have been granted authorization exactly 6 months to the day of 9/11 on the sixth month. I guess you can't call it an anniversary. Lunaversary might be better, and it certainly is loony. But the idea is that 6 months to the day after the attacks, Citizenship and Immigration Services gave these two thugs, these two criminals, these two, gosh, I don't even know what words to use, pieces of trash authority to go to flight school. Of course, by then the whole world knew they were dead. By then the whole world knew they had been terrorists, but that didn't stop Citizenship and Immigration Services. And it is that screwed up agency that would be called upon to administer comprehensive immigration reform. But we're being told by the Gang of Eight, well, once Janet Napolitano attests to the fact that the southern border is secure, we're good to go. How many times have we heard her say the border is as secure as it's ever been? It's more secure than it's ever been. The border's great. The border's fab. There's no problem on the border. Really? Really? Do you believe that? So they're going to go back to Nappy, and she's now going to say the border's secure, and if the Gang of Eight in Congress get their way, what will immediately happen is the administration will seek to have all of the illegal aliens in the country granted lawful authority and ultimately a pathway to citizenship. I taped a segment for a television program in Lehigh, Pennsylvania. It will be airing on April 25th, And for those of you who get my commentaries, you will know in advance when and where to be able to go online and see the interview. I actually did it from home. I called it in. The other people were in the studio. You just got to hear my voice. But, you know, I did the best I could. And the nonsense that you hear from the other side, well, we're going to do fingerprinting and we'll know who they are and the sun's going to shine and everything is going to be honky-dory. What a fictitious creation that is. The difference between a background check, by the way, and a full field investigation is kind of like comparing that little, and I'm sure you've seen it, the guy that sits in the mall with a blood pressure machine and they tell you what your blood pressure is. Compare that with going to your doctor and having a complete physical when they draw blood and do all sorts of things, maybe a chest x-ray. There is no comparison between the guy with that blood pressure cuff and a doctor who does an honest-to-God physical. But we're being told, and the American people are buying this foolishness, oh, we're going to do a background check on these people so we're going to know if they're okay. Let me tell you how a background check works. All that they do is run fingerprints and the name that's on the application. If the person has never been arrested in the United States, the odds are good that even if he or she is a terrorist, that the fingerprints will not show up in the database. The fingerprints, when they submit them, will sail right on through and come back with what is known as a no hit, no record. In other words, we have nothing on file. If there's nothing on file for the fingerprints, and this terrorist provides a fake name, says he's Donald Duck, she says she's Minnie Mouse, they run those BS names and, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If they give phony names and the names come back clean, and the fingerprints come back clean, within 24 to 48 hours, these folks will be granted an official identity document by the wonderful folks at Citizenship and Immigration Services that they can immediately use to get driver's licenses, social security cards, credit cards, library cards, not inconsequential because that means access anonymously to the internet. They will be able to get a job that, if it doesn't have national security implications, will have critical infrastructure implications, for example, food processing plants and the like. They will have access to airplanes. They will have access to corporate and government office buildings, all on the basis of a security check. A background investigation, as compared with a background check, means you go out with photographs and you knock on doors and you question people and you say to them, do you know this guy? So let's say they were doing my background investigation, which is what was done, in fact, when I was hired. And then as an agent with a top secret clearance, every 5 years they had to re-up my clearance, get it up to modern times to make sure I hadn't headed south somehow. So you go to a door, and you knock on the door, they look at the picture, and if they say, do you know who the guy is? The guy says, yeah, that's Mike Cutler. Everybody says, well, that's great. But imagine if someone says, gee, I know him as Joe Smith. Well, wait a minute. This is Mike. How do you know him as Joe Smith? Now you have to start to conduct an investigation and find out, have I been using more than one identity? If so, why? And so forth. That's a background investigation. They're not foolproof, but boy, oh boy, there is a big, big, big difference between that kind of an investigation and some guy sitting in an office sliding a fingerprint card into a scanner and then punching a name into a computer. And in the discussion, that's all being lost. What's being lost is that right now the General Accountability Office and the Office of Inspector General, and for those of you not familiar with the jargon, Inspector General is like Internal Affairs, they have been finding numerous instances of fraud. In fact, the Center for Immigration Studies did a report that said that dozens of aliens who were granted citizenship, in reality, never should have been naturalized. They went on and became terrorists or spies. They wound up stealing and selling sensitive information. So understand what we're dealing with. Citizenship and Immigration Services has no integrity over there right now. And then I think you may have heard, or I hope you heard, that during the presidential debates, President Obama said that it will be his goal to clear up the backlog of applications. They're always chasing the backlog. This is the dog chasing his tail. One of these days, that dog is going to bite down on the tail. And one of these days, what they're doing at Citizenship and Immigration Services is going to bite down on us. Because they're talking about how, you know, we're going to clear up the backlog. Well, here's what you should know. For an adjudications officer to approve an application, the process takes under 30 minutes. Okay? To deny an application takes hours or days, because now you've got to write a formal report that explains why you would not grant that alien a green card or citizenship or the authority to change status and go to school or do something else. It makes sense that an approval is relatively quick. Everything is in order. You stamp it here and you stamp it there and you stamp it in some other place. The application's approved. And whammo, it moves on the production line to the next stop. But when you deny an application, now the alien is entitled, and I agree with it, by the way, to an explanation and documentation and so forth. That is time-consuming. So if you're fixated on clearing up the backlog, then you really don't want to find many, if any, fraudulent applications. So what do we have? Tons of applications involving fraud. Why? Because they are intent on moving the lines of applications, not on making certain that it has integrity. And that, folks, is a threat to national security. It's a threat to community safety. And this is what is passing for business as usual. And I can tell you in my experience how the naturalization process changed tremendously over the years. It's hard for me to believe this, but I started working for the old INS back in 1971 as an immigration inspector at Kennedy Airport. And around 1973, I was approached and asked if I wanted to work as an adjudications officer. Back then, we were known as examiners. And we did the marriage interviews. I'm sure you've all seen them on TV or in the movies where the husband and the wife are separated and the adjudications officer asks them questions. They look to see if they match. And in one of the cases, and I in fact mentioned it yesterday when I was at the Republican Party in Queens Village, there was a case where we identified an attorney who was arranging marriages, as it turned out, between Chinese seamen who had jumped ship and young ladies who were of Puerto Rican ancestry, what we refer to in New York as a New Yorican, part New Yorker, part Puerto Rican. And these young ladies happened to have been prostitutes. They did not speak a common language with their alleged husbands. The interview I conducted was done with a translator for the husband, not for the wife. The alien was at least twice as old as the young lady. He was a heavyset guy. Not much going on between his ears. In fact, when you looked into his eyes, there was nothing going on. I wasn't sure this guy didn't have a flatline EEG. The young lady, on the other hand, was quite a little firecracker with fishnet stockings, a little mini skirt, everything hanging out of everywhere, and a purple and black punk hairdo with a little dog collar around her neck. She was the image of you get the message. They couldn't speak a common language. Ultimately, the attorney was found guilty at a trial. I testified at that trial. It was my first time on the witness stand. So I've seen the scenic tour. I see how all of this works. And while I was doing those marriage interviews, right next to me was an attorney who had worked for the government for many years. His name was Tony DeGata. Tony was one of the funniest guys in the world, and he was well-grounded in law. And back then, folks, it was only immigration lawyers who had many years in, who were highly trusted and highly experienced, who were even allowed to touch a naturalization application. Today, we farm them out. It's all been privatized. No one cares about anything. Back when Tony DeGata sat in that little cubicle next to me, he would ask to see the witnesses that were brought in. Because back then, aliens had to provide two witnesses who would attest to their good moral character. Back then, agents actually went out, knocked on doors, and conducted what were known as GMC investigations. Don't get excited. I'll tell you what it stands for. GMC, were Good Moral Character Investigations. The idea was that if a guy or a gal had no arrest record, that still wasn't a guarantee they possessed good moral character. The agent would go out into the community. And so let's say, for argument's sake, that Joe Smith from England was attempting to become a United States citizen, and they would knock on the door of the neighbors, and they'd say, do you know this guy? Oh, he's Joe Smith. What kind of guy is he? Oh, he's a good guy, except Friday nights he has a drinking habit. So he drinks, and he goes to this place where they do illegal gambling at night, and then there's hookers there, and then he comes home, and invariably, if his wife says anything, he slaps her around, and one day he got so angry, he threw his son's cat out the window, and the poor cat went splat on the pavement. The cops never showed up, but he's really got a terrible temper, and he just has a vicious personality. Well, let me tell you, if a number of people corroborated the same information, we would not confer citizenship on that person because that person did not demonstrate good moral character. Contrast that way of doing business with how we do it today. No witnesses, no outside investigation. And in fact, when the Clinton administration ran Citizenship USA just a few years after the attacks of 93, and we knew that the attacks of 93 couldn't have been carried out if the aliens had been under greater scrutiny when they applied for visas and when they came here, but that didn't stop the Clinton administration. They created a program, Citizenship USA, and what was so bizarre about it, they ran over a million aliens through the citizenship process, lickety-split, in fact, in many instances, before they even got back fingerprint records. The General Accountability Office conducted investigations, the Inspector General conducted investigations, and they determined that there were a number of aliens, probably in the thousands, who not only should never have been naturalized, they probably should have been deported. So it's USCIS, a division of DHS that Miss Napolitano oversees, that would be pressed into service to process the applications of what we're being told is 11 million illegal aliens. I'm willing to bet it would be over 30 million. You wonder why? I'll tell you why. In 1986, we were told, those of us working for the old INS, were told that there were approximately a million to probably no more than a million and a half illegal aliens in the country. When they implemented that amnesty of 86 under the Immigration Reform and Control Act, IRCA as we called it, we wound up with almost 4 million applications. Almost 4 million. So if the same ratio holds true and they're saying 11 to 12 million, you do the math and see what you come up with. You're going to probably come up with 35 million at least. No face-to-face interviews, folks. There won't be time. No way. There will be no field investigations, no time, no resources. These applications will be processed en masse, and these adjudications offices will be wearing out their approval stamps. Meanwhile, the linchpin that holds immigration together are identity documents and people's names. The way that we determine who gets on airplanes, these no-fly lists very often have no biometric. They just have a name. So what we will wind up doing is giving terrorists and criminals official identity documents in brand new, clean names. And if you don't think this poses a threat to national security, think again. So now we come back full circle to the Gang of Eight, and they said, hey, if Napolitano says the border is secure, it must be. No one's asking about the Canadian border, about the 95,000 miles of coastline of the United States, or about the fact that there are between 5 and 10 million illegal aliens in our country who did not run our borders, but in fact were admitted into the United States through ports of entry, and then one way or the other they went on to violate the terms of their admission, they committed felonies, they took jobs they weren't supposed to take, and so forth. Before I get off this issue and move on to what's in the news as per the ICE website looking at their news releases, I want to remind you of something that no one's talking about again, mainstream media. I touched upon it when I was on the Cavuto program. Immigration used to be the responsibility of the Labor Department. That, folks, is how we built the middle class. We shielded American workers from unfair competition from foreign workers. It helped to keep wages high. It kept unemployment low. This isn't about vilifying illegal aliens or immigrants. Understand, and I'll make the statement to you, if I was living in abject squalor in Mexico, and if I couldn't feed my family, and if I was desperate, I don't know that I wouldn't come across that border. Let's be real honest about this. But this is going on not because Mexico lacks the wherewithal to care for its citizens, but because Mexico is a corrupt country with a corrupt government where you have an oligarchy controlling 90-something percent of the economy. So what happens is Mexicans who want a decent standard of living can't do that in Mexico. They come to the United States. And NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, exacerbated the problem. And it was right after they enacted NAFTA that we saw a real massive influx of illegal aliens from Mexico. Because what happened was, under NAFTA, ADM and the other agricultural conglomerates competed against Mexican farmers for the market in Mexico. And guess what they found out? The Mexican farmer, the mom-and-pop farm family, was no match for American farm aggregates. So they were driven out of the marketplace, the Mexican farmers were. In some cases, they lost the land that had belonged to their families for generations, which I am sure did nothing to endear Americans in their hearts. We are creating enemies around the world for ourselves by allowing corporations to make these decisions. And when these folks lost their land, what do? They headed north. If the Mexican government was forced to address the unfairness in their economic system, Mexicans would not have to come here. They wouldn't have to seek employment here and be treated terribly. They could stay in their own country, stay with their families. We keep hearing about family reunification. There's no reason for those families to split up in the first place. They should be able to live successful lives in their own country. And you know what? I have a radical thought here, folks. Americans should be able to live decent lives in America today. And that, folks, if you haven't noticed, is becoming increasingly difficult. Forget difficult. How about impossible? 1 in 6 American families now living below the poverty line. 1 in 4 American children now living below the poverty line. Kids coming out of college with student loans that look more like mortgage payments than student loans, and they still can't find work, especially in their area of expertise. That's not the American dream, but it is Alan Greenspan's dream. Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer April 30th of 2009. Got to get the dates right. Where he referred to Americans with skills or education as the privileged elite. Let me repeat it. He said that Americans with skills or education had become the privileged elite, earning a wage premium. He didn't want to say they're making too much damn money, so they're earning a wage premium. You got to love the guy's use of semantics. And he said the solution to this wage premium was to eliminate or greatly increase the quotas for foreign workers, because to Greenspan, the goal was to eliminate or greatly reduce inequality in wages. Now, right there you think, well, that sounds right. We don't want inequality in the workplace, whether it's based on gender or race or religion or ethnicity. Discrimination is wrong, and I agree 1,000,000% with that. But he wasn't talking about inequality based on gender. He wasn't talking about inequality based on race or religion or ethnicity. No, sir. What Greenspan was talking about, I kid you not, you can see the video. Go to my website, michaelcutler.net. I believe Caps Web still has it up on theirs, and I've talked about it on talkborder.com. What Alan Greenspan was referring to was inequality of wages based on skill. Sounds remarkably like communism, doesn't it? To each according to his needs, from each according to his ability. In theory, the high school dropout makes as much money as the guy with a PhD doing cancer research. Is that the American dream, folks? Is this government by the people? Is this in our best interests or our children or their children's best interests? I think you know the answer. So, again, we come back to Napolitano and the Gang of Eight. And the Gang of Eight had nothing in their statement about, gee whiz, there needs to be integrity to this program. Not a word about that. Not a word about, you know, they already processed between 6 and 8 million applications at Citizenship and Immigration Services. What will this do to their workload and to the integrity of the process? Not a word about that. Not a word about the amnesty of 86 starting out with 1.5 million or less and going to 4 million. They just keep repeating the mantra, oh, yes, it's 11 million, and we're going to get them out of the shadows. We're going to bring 11 million out of the shadows. Let me tell you what's in the shadows, folks. The truth is being kept from the American people in those same damn shadows. This is not about being anti-immigrant. And I will tell you, as I've often noted, the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. We all like company to visit, but not when they climb through our bedroom window in the middle of the night. So you have the Gang of Eight saying, hey, we can enact comprehensive immigration reform just as soon as Napolitano gets in front of the microphones and says the magic words, no, it's not abracadabra, the border is secure. The border is secure. And at that moment, they can launch this insanity known as comprehensive immigration reform that I have come to call the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. Folks, this is a betrayal of gargantuan proportions. If we don't do our best to get our word out there to our elected representatives, I fear that they will do this, and I fear that there will be no going back. And my concern is that we will irreparably damage America's national security, and we will drive America into poverty. You know, one of the things that's also not spoken about, when I was an agent back in 1986, when they enacted the amnesty program, we got a gazillion phone calls from aliens who had gotten that magic card signifying that they were legally entitled to stay in America and work here. And they went to their employer and said to the employer, Mr. Boss, I don't think you're a nice guy, but I'm going to keep working for you because I live 4 blocks from the factory. I know the people I work with, and I understand what's expected of me. But by the way, I'm not going to work for $5 an hour anymore, Mr. Boss. I want prevailing wage, and let's say the prevailing wage is $11.50 an hour. And you know what the boss said? You're fired. And he hired the next wave of illegal aliens. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how we got to where we are today. None of this seems to make its way into the national conversation. Now, here is an article from the ICE news release. And, of course, ICE is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, not to be confused with HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, which is a division of ICE that they like to use with greater frequency so they can eliminate the word immigration from the equation altogether. I kid you not. February 7th, 2013, Los Angeles, California, the ICE office in Los Angeles, issued a press release, and it said, key player in large-scale human smuggling ring sentenced to 8 years in prison. Judge cites tactics of smuggling trade in opposing the lengthy prison term. What tactics? Well, let me read a little further. Los Angeles, a Guatemalan national who admitted playing a central role in a large-scale human smuggling organization that brought thousands of illegal aliens from Central America to Southern California, often holding them against their will in so-called drop houses, has been sentenced to 8 years in federal prison. Freddy Oswaldo Gomez Reyes, 44, was sentenced Wednesday by Judge S. James Otero, who pointed to the smuggling organization's tactics, including the use of weapons and guard dogs to intimidate the illegal aliens, as the basis for the 96-month prison term. Gámez pleaded guilty in May 2012 to 6 criminal counts of harboring and concealing illegal aliens for financial gain, following a probe by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Homeland Security Investigations. There we go, HSI. According to court documents, Gámez acknowledged that he served as a supervisor for a criminal organization that smuggled more than 6,000 illegal aliens into Southern California during a 3-year period beginning in 2008 and generated an estimated $10 million in income. Now, not a word in the press release about any efforts being made to locate the 6,000 aliens he smuggled in. Let's go back and look at why we have immigration laws. They're designed to keep aliens out of the country who may have dangerous communicable diseases, who may suffer mental illness, who may be criminals, may be human traffickers, may be gang members, may be weapons runners and money launderers, may be murderers and arsonists, right? Child abusers, child rapists. Maybe someone who was previously deported or somebody who would take jobs that Americans desperately need. We don't know why they're here. We don't know who they are. All we know is that they refused to subject themselves to the lawful inspections process because they could not pass muster. And I'm not going to get heavy on law, but I want you to know that if you go to Title 8, United States Code, because that's how it's written up by code, the Immigration and Nationality Act is contained in Title 8. If you go to Section 1182, what you're going to find are the grounds for excluding an alien from the United States. And it lists all of those categories of aliens I just told you. So an alien who evades the inspections process probably did so, most likely did so, most reasonably and rationally evaded the process, because he or she knew that they belonged to one or more categories of aliens who by law are excludable, meaning the criminals, the spies, the terrorists, the gang members, and so forth. And some of them, of course, are simply coming to work and take jobs that they shouldn't be taking, which has a huge impact on American workers who can't support themselves. And when foreign nationals make a paycheck, by the way, you know what they do with it. They send much of it as home, much of that money to their home country as they can. So then that money is no longer being circulated throughout the economy. Think about the president's economic stimulus package that ran up the debt to the tune of trillions of dollars, saying that if we pump money into the economy, we can get the economy moving and we can get more people working. Foreign nationals send over $100 billion, with a B, $100 billion out of the United States each and every year. Why in the world is it a good idea to have people working in America who supplant Americans and who will send money out of our country and out of our economy so our economy does not benefit from it one bit? Where am I getting it wrong? And then you look at what this guy did. Attack dogs, weapons, kidnapping, holding people against their will, and he himself was a citizen of Guatemala. This goes back to the point I keep on making. The most likely victim of the crimes committed by criminal aliens are other aliens within that same ethnic community, or maybe naturalized citizens who live in that same ethnic immigrant community. Stop and think about that. Is it really anti-immigrant to do whatever is possible to combat people like that coming to America and exploiting the illegal aliens? And the other thing that they will very often do, and this isn't just about Latin America, folks. That's another one of those lies. This is about aliens irrespective of where they come from, whether it's Russia, whether it's Asia, whether it's Latin America, whether it's Europe, whether it's the Caribbean, doesn't matter. They threaten to do harm to family members back in the home country if they don't do the bidding of the bad guys. That's where we're at today. And yet, when Mike Cutler stands up or some other people stand up, the first thing you hear, oh, you don't like immigrants. I don't like immigrants being exploited. If you really believe that it is anti-immigrant to want to enforce immigration law, then you would believe that a person who refused to own a slave during that dark era of American history when slavery passed from business as usual in all too many parts of this country. If they, back then, this is the equivalent of saying that if you didn't want to own a slave, then you obviously didn't like black people. This is insane. It is insane to think that people that exploit illegal aliens are somehow doing the alien a favor. The guy that rapes a girl isn't helping her with her social life, okay? Let's be as clear as I know how to be about this. No one is doing those aliens a favor by exploiting them and treating them like trash. It defies belief what I have seen as an agent in my 30 years. What passes for business as usual. When I testified before the Indiana State Senate a couple of years ago when they were trying to get Mike Delf's bill, State Senator Delf's bill through the process, SB 570 and then 590, I remember during my first appearance there, I was approached by an illegal alien who was permitted to testify at that hearing. And for a moment, I thought, gosh, I hope this guy doesn't want to have a fist fight. I'm on the wrong side of 60, and I'm just not up for this nonsense, because this kid was motivated. And he ran up to me with a couple of his friends who had come to the hearing, and he spoke broken English. And rather than be angry with me, he thanked me. He thanked me because I had talked about this nonsense that we heard from a representative of the Chamber of Commerce and a representative of the Catholic Church, the dignity of the undocumented. And I said, what dignity? I've gone into apartments with just one bathroom and two bedrooms where there's no furnishings, maybe a beat-up old dresser. The only other furnishings to be found were filthy bare mattresses laid end-to-end and side-to-side where illumination generally came. Illumination came from a light switch hanging out of a bare wire in the ceiling, where the stench stayed in your nostrils for weeks, where when you turned on the light, all the insects in that apartment started to scatter. We used to call it a moving wall. The wall looked a lot like the football stands with the fans doing the wave. I said, is this what passes for human dignity, for decency? To have people living in abject squalor, where one person would get off that bare, filthy mattress to be replaced by somebody else because they would sleep in shifts because they work round the clock? Is this the dignity? And this young man came up to me and he said, Mr. Cutler, he said, I know you don't want me to be in your country because I broke the law to come here. And he said, I don't want to be here either, but I have a wife and children and I can't feed them if I stay home. He said, but if you treated a dog the way I'm treated, if you treated a dog the way my friends are treated, you would go to jail. But when they do it to me or my friends, it's just another day in America. He started to cry, and I got choked up also. This is the mythology that is being spewed by the other side, that somehow those of us that believe in secure borders, those of us who believe in enforcing the immigration laws, we're mean-spirited, we're evil people. The mission of the U.S. Armed Services is to secure America's borders from outside, to keep our enemy, in other words, as far from our shores as possible. There is no way on God's green earth that they can accomplish their mission when we already have unknown millions of illegal aliens living throughout this country in every town and city. They're here from every country on the planet. There is no integrity to the process or to the system. DHS has been an abject failure in carrying out its vital mission of enforcing the immigration laws. And in failing to live up to its obligations, it undermines the gallantry and the sacrifices of the men and women of our armed forces. Because at the end of the day, the armed forces can't keep the enemy far from our shores. Ladies and gentlemen, some of our enemy are already here. and we let them in. We let them in through the front door, and we let them in through the back door. We let them in by an ever-expanding visa waiver program. We're now up to 37. That's 11 more than was on that list on 9/11. We have between 5 and 10 million illegal aliens in our country now who entered the U.S. through the inspections process. And they're coming by running the Mexican border. They are coming across the Canadian border. A while back from my website, michaelcutler.net, I wrote an article where I said that Paul Revere had it easy, one if by land, two if by sea, with three lanterns, he had it covered. I came up with a list of 10 or 12 items of different ways of coming here and embedding them, and I said, gosh, if Paul Revere were alive and was trying to do it with lanterns, he'd have to buy out all the lanterns at Home Depot or Lowe's or the local hardware store, and he'd probably set fire to the Old North Church in the process. There is no shortage of ways of coming to America if you are an alien who is determined to come here and perhaps do harm to us. It makes no sense. It makes no sense that we strip search 90-year-old women or 85-year-old women or 4-year-old girls and do all these other crazy things, that we are subjected to x-rays by these machines or whatever radiation they make use of. I'm not a physicist, but I do know that I've seen enough articles pointing in the disturbing direction that they've really never established whether or not those machines emit a safe level of radiation. Actually, I'm not sure that I even know what a safe level is. So we're willing to throw our expectations of privacy to the wind. We are willing to be subjected to an ever-intrusive inspection when we try to get on an airplane in the name of national security. But no one does anything to make certain that people can't evade an inspections process that at its foundation is designed to keep the bad guys out of our country. And then you come to randomness. See, if you're out there enforcing the law, you don't know what you're going to encounter. Half of the FBI's 10 most wanted get arrested by police officers, usually doing a car stop. The guy that runs a light, the guy that shows up on a sobriety checkpoint. Randomness. I can't tell you how many times working with my colleagues at the INS, you would arrest an illegal alien, come back to his house, and you'd find some literature, you'd find weapons, you'd find drugs, you'd find address books, and when you start looking at it, you realize this guy was plugged into a criminal organization or a terrorist group or maybe had some issues involving espionage or whatever. We worked closely with the FBI for all those reasons. We worked closely with the other agencies. It's kind of like the lottery, you know, the saying, you got to be in it to win it. We're not in it. Any terrorist who wants to come to America now knows what the playbook is. Come across the border, keep a low profile. Who knows? You might even want to apply for amnesty so you can then get an official identity document and a fake name. And by the way, we hear this business, well, if they've been paying their taxes and if they've been living here for a certain period of time, how do you even know? And the immigration laws aren't about taxes, by the way. It's INS that I used to work for, not the IRS. People should pay their taxes, but that's not what this is about. You can't simply pay a tax and say, well, problem solved. What we don't know is what motivated someone to evade the inspections process in the first place. And when they enter without inspection, they've left no record. There is no way of discerning the alien who came here last week and is claiming he's been here for 5 years and the alien who actually came here 5 years ago. And that was part of what we learned with the amnesty of 86. And what you should know about the amnesty of 86, by the way, was that there was a provision in the law that said that immigration agents could not share the information contained in those files without first having a judge agree to it, basically. So if some FBI agent came to you, and I had that happen, and say we're looking for a guy that we think committed multiple homicides, I could not simply turn over that amnesty file to that FBI agent unless I was looking to be criminally prosecuted myself and lose my job. This is the lunacy we've been seeing from both sides of the political aisle. final thought for you folks, and I'm so glad to be with you this evening. There are many issues that many of us feel passionate about on both sides of the argument. I want you to realize that Americans who disagree with you are not your enemy. The rancor, the vitriolic rhetoric is at ear-splitting levels today in America, and this is very worrying and it's very disgusting. You may not like what your neighbor believes or what your neighbor says or what your neighbor thinks. He may not like what you think. I'll tell you what the Founding Fathers thought, although I obviously never spoke to them. We can read their words. We can read the First Amendment of the Constitution that talks not only about freedom of press, freedom of speech, and freedom of religion. Everyone rattles those three right off. Boy, we've got that memorized. There are two more. One, the right to seek redress of grievances, and if you don't have grievances, I'm not sure you're still alive. You know, there was a wonderful talk show host, Terry Anderson, who passed away a couple years ago, had a wonderful line. He said, if you ain't mad, you ain't paying attention. So we certainly have grievances. But the Founding Fathers also said that we had the right to peaceable assemblage. And the reason they believe that, folks, is because they understood that you cannot have a democratic process without debate and discourse, and disagreement and argument. All they said is do it peacefully. Leave your clubs, your guns, and your knives at home, and then have at it. If your neighbor disagrees with you, that's fine. Try to sit down and have a discussion. Try to work out your differences. And please, I ask you to decouple. Remove immigration from all the other issues. I don't care which side of the gay rights debate you're on. Really don't. I don't care which side of school prayer you're on. I really don't. I don't care which side you're on any of the other issues, including the abortion issue. Okay? If we cannot secure America's borders, if we cannot effectively enforce America's laws, this country will cease to exist. I've often written that a country without secure borders can no more stand than can a house without walls. If we can't get our priorities straight, we will argue ourselves into a hole in the ground, literally and figuratively. Put the issues that I've just described, abortion and school prayer, and gay rights, and all those. Put them in a big box, put a big bow on it, and put it in the back of your shelf. And keep it there until America's borders are secure, until America's immigration system does live up to its obligations of protecting innocent lives and the jobs of American workers. Because America cannot exist without a secure border. No country can. Our goal, folks, has to be to unite as many of our fellow Americans as possible on that one issue, the issue of immigration. You should know that Barbara Jordan, a liberal black member of Congress, great lady, came to be known as the person who headed up, they named it the Jordan Commission in her honor. There was a study that was done about immigration. And guess what, folks? This liberal Democrat was livid over illegal immigration. She felt it was going to be the undoing of America. The open borders crowd tries to change the language, change the words, change the narrative. They often quote Cesar Chavez from the United Farm Workers Union. Oh, Chavez would have done this, and Chavez would have said that. Cesar Chavez, for the record, was vehemently, at supersonic levels, absolutely, positively opposed to illegal immigration because he knew what it was doing to American migrant workers. It was making it impossible for them to support themselves or their kids. Meager as their salaries were, they've gotten worse because we won't secure our borders. You need to understand the deception that is being foisted upon us and by our politicians, whether it's by the journalists or the folks with an axe to grind, because there's lots of people making tons of money off of the exploitation of foreign workers. It's ugly. It is absolutely ugly. We have got to get together as Americans. We have got to get together and demand that our elected representatives understand that our borders exist at international airports as well as along the coastal region of the United States, as well as along the northern border and the southern border of the United States. This is not simply an area of concern for the residents of four border states, but a matter of concern for all 50 of America's states. And as Americans, we need to come together, irrespective of party affiliation, irrespective of other philosophical differences that we may have with one another, and we should celebrate those differences. That's what democracy is about, that we are free to disagree. That's as American as apple pie. But if we're going to retain that freedom, if we're going to retain the most incredible country ever put together by human beings in the history of the human species, then the security of our borders and the security of the immigration system have to be considered at the foundation of national security, first and foremost. And that's not going to happen if we keep on fighting with our fellow Americans. The open borders advocates and the politicians who are working against us love when we fight with one another. It's a philosophy of divide and conquer. It's as old as the human species itself. Don't be foolish. Please think about this. Work with your neighbors. I don't care what their political affiliation is. If they're Americans, they are supposed to be our allies. We can have the debates, but at the end of the day, we all need to understand the true value of secure borders and effective immigration law enforcement. The hour went quickly. We actually are in overtime right now. It's 10 minutes after the hour. I want to thank all of you for having spent this past hour and 10 minutes with me. It's a delight for me, I will tell you, to spend the end of my week with all of you, where we can have these conversations. Next week I will probably have a guest join me once again, but I wanted to make sure that I was very focused on talking about the impending threat being posed by this lunacy of comprehensive immigration reform. It would really and truly represent the betrayal of America, Americans, national security. It would do irreparable harm. This isn't about xenophobia, folks. It's common sense. You're not antisocial if you look through your peephole before you admit strangers into your home. That's what I ask that America does. In fact, when I provided a declaration to the law firm that was retained by Governor Jan Brewer, I described the first 4 years of my career as an immigration inspector sitting in that booth at Kennedy Airport as at a time when I had my eye to the peephole on America's front door. When we go to restaurants, we are very specific about the food that we want to eat, the way we want it prepared. We need to be no less specific about what we expect of our elected representatives. That's the job that all Americans must do. As I always like to say, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. Please take your obligations as American citizens seriously. Try to show the same enthusiasm for what's going on in Washington that we saw the sports fans demonstrating at the Super Bowl just a week ago. The Super Bowl was a game. What's going on in Washington is a travesty. Only we the people can set it straight. And that's the work we all must do. Thank you again for joining me this evening. Have a great weekend. Stay warm, those of you in the northeast of the country. And I look forward to speaking with you next time, same place. So long, everybody. Have a great weekend.